It is indeed 4:06, and good afternoon there, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Whoops.
Hey, sounding good there.
Well, good. It's kind of like I'm in an echo chamber here.
Uh-oh. What you got on your mind today?
Oh, gee whiz. Landscaping, and with all the good news that we've had over the last few months, I'm going to bring some positive information to people so they can better their life, so they can better their yard, so they can make their yard prettier and nicer, and they will be happier because it is pretty and nice. How's that? Okay. And if you have any questions, we can get you on the air, and the number would be 673-4464. And any question is fair game, and we'll try to get you some information and set you on the right path so that you have good success in your landscaped yard. And I want to thank you all for listening today. It was a nice day today. Now, as I was walking in the studio, it's starting to rain again. I'm thinking, I thought we were done with that, but apparently not. And at any rate, here in Douglas County, we are finally experiencing a real winter. The last two winters have not been what I would call normal by any stretch of the imagination. We're getting snow and rain, and it's coming in abundance like the old days, you know, back in the old days, 3 or 4 years ago. And, of course, we're seeing tree limbs breaking and trees falling over from heavy snow. And the shrubs that are crushed or badly out of shape because of all the snow that has landed on them. However, all this can be fixed by pruning. And I know I've spoken about pruning 100 times on the show, but never hurts to kind of remind you. And maybe there's a new listener out there that doesn't know anything about pruning. So when the snow finally melts, you can fix the mess that your yard might be in at this point. I've had a few trees out at my place, a branch broken here and another branch broken there. And then I've had some flowering cherries that I've had for, 25 years. Beautiful. Well, I'm going to have to do some severe pruning on them. I had some major limbs break, and they're just like, it's an ugly mess right now. But I'm waiting till all the snow gets out of the way before I attack them. But I'm going to cut them severely, and it'll be fine. And I'll report upon their survival rate next spring and summer and let you know how well they've done, and I'll bring it up. So, but if you have a question about anything in your yard, give us a call, and 673-4464. But you know what this weather does? It makes me thankful for spring. You know, like within 60 days, we will see much improvement in our landscapes because things are going to begin to grow. New growth is going to be happening. And so don't despair. It's going to get better. We get through this series of whatever we're in, and the temperatures will begin to rise slowly, and we'll have less and less really cold days. And by the end of February, you'll be amazed at what's going on around here. If you're new to the county and you're looking at all these bare trees wondering, geez, Louise, this is a dreary place, just wait. Don't hold your breath, but just wait, and you'll be okay. And then one of the reasons I talk about pruning is not only to, you know, fix your plants that might need some pruning, but most people, of course, are afraid to prune. And, you know, as I've said in the past, it's like cutting your fingernails. It doesn't hurt, and they grow back, and they'll continue to do that. And what you need to do, though, if you're inexperienced at that, do some homework. Learn how to prune. There's probably stuff on the internet that you can bop into, or there's books that you can buy on pruning. Shows you color photos from before and afters, what the messy tree or shrub looks like before you attack it, and then what it looks like when you're done, and how pretty it is, and how good it is, and how more healthy it is. You have to learn how to do this now. And if you try it and you say, oh, gee whiz, I don't get it, so hire a professional. You know, we prune stuff all winter. That's our we do very few real landscaping jobs in the winter because of the weather. So mostly we're fixated on pruning orchards, lots of shrubs. I take care of a whole lot of widows that have been with me for, 40 years or more. And they helped me when I was starting out, and I landscaped their yards. And here I am 40 years later, and they say, Mike, can you come over? We need these trees pruned. We need the shrubs pruned. And I gladly go over. They've been loyal to me for all these years, and I love every one of them. But it's not rocket science. I think it's the fear factor that stops most people from pruning. And it's okay. It's good. It'll help your plants. It won't hurt your plants. And if you don't prune, the plants will get ugly. And if they have broken branches and stuff, the disease can get in, or bugs or bacteria, and cause it to get sick or even die. So don't be afraid. And during the snow, I had a great time. I had a large oak limb fall on my main power line from the pole to the house. And I didn't know it at the time. I'm not an electrician, but it pulled the wires out from the house. And after 3 days, finally, I got somebody to come out. And these gentlemen from Douglas Electric came up to repair the damage. And they did such a great job. I really appreciated them. They were like there a half an hour, fixed it all totally, completely, wonderfully, flipped the switch, and we were on in power. And I'd like to publicly thank Lauren and Matt from Douglas Electric. They did a great job. So if you ever need something, ask for Lauren or Matt. they'll fix you up. But, you know, out in the boondocks where I live, when you're out of power, you're really out of power. And it's just like, whoa. And we tried, and we were sitting there, on the third night, and the power kind of flashed on, and I thought, wow, this is great. And then everything dimmed down, and then it flashed back bright, then it dimmed down. So I knew there was something really wrong with somewhere in the whole deal. And in fact, the surge deal on my TV started smoking, and we pulled the plugs on that and found out that our stove blew up, and it wouldn't work. So now my wife has a brand new stove as of Monday, and we got another surge protector, and the TV is actually working. So, hey, we came out of it really, really good. But that big limb, big old oak tree, it just fell down and bango, and my main line was only 4 feet off the ground. And so it was kind of a tricky thing for a while, but we made it. So Lauren and Matt fixed everything in like 45 minutes. And they just, we chatted, and they did this and they did that, and I watched them. I don't want to mess with it. That's their expertise, not mine. But anyway, we're good. And I'm very thankful to those two gentlemen. They're true professionals at what they do, and they're also nice guys. So at any rate, that's my sad story for the week. It really wasn't a sad story, but okay, new topic kind of here, bare root season. I know a lot of folks understand what bare root season is, but for those who don't, I'll give you some explanation and how good it can be. But bare root season will be starting soon, probably end of this month. We'll be starting to get our first batch of bare root fruit trees and shade trees in. And bare root actually just means trees and shrubs that are not in pots. The roots are bare. They're just kind of out there. But the trees are dormant, so it doesn't affect them at all as long as you keep them damp. And there are several advantages to bare root plants. First of all, they're about half price of a regular potted tree. So let's say if there was a fruit tree for $50, for $25 you can buy them bare root. Same tree, but it's just There's no labor. There's no pots. There's no care. There's no nothing. You just go home and put it in. And they're not heavy. You know, no pot, no soil, etc. You can carry three or four trees easily. They don't worry about it. And they don't have to be planted immediately. You can store them in your backyard for a couple of weeks or even a month, you know, as the weather stays nice and cold and wet. And all you have to do is just cover the roots with a blanket or a tarp or something or some mulch until you dig the holes, and because they're dormant. Now, digging the holes now, there's so much moisture in the soil that if any holes you might dig will fill up with water. Well, you don't plant them in a hole full of water or you're not going to have any survival. So you just wait, like I say, maybe another month, a few weeks, whatever, until that water in the hole finally drains out and you've got your good soil mix ready to go in. And that's when you put your bare root tree or your bare root shrub in the hole and then fill it up with your good soil. Good soil meaning something with some organic material, a little bit of topsoil or sand, some bark mulch, all mixed together so that that root system can immediately grab a hold and start to penetrate and get growing. If you just dig a hole in regular clay soil that's hard and doesn't drain well, the roots can't penetrate that. And that's one of the causes of early death in fruit or shade trees here in Douglas County. But about the end of January, last week in January, first week in February is when we get the bare roots in. And that usually lasts till about mid-March and maybe even into April if the weather stays cool, wet, and rainy and they're not really leafing out yet, or even if they are, if you are diligent in protecting the roots, you can plant them at any time. I've planted them very late just to see what would happen. And one year I had so many trees left over, I just put them in sawdust and chips. And I thought, well, I'll just keep them over until next year and just pull them out, because they weren't in soil. They were just in sawdust. And they leafed out and they grew and they did wonderfully all that summer. And then the very next winter, we just pulled them all out and sold them as bare root again. So it was okay. So like I said, if a potted tree is, say, $60 or more, you can get the same size tree for maybe $25, $35 for bare root. It's just a labor thing and a material thing. And we'll give you all the instructions for planting and care for success, like, you know, how large the planting hole should be, the type of soil for good growth, how to fertilize, how to water for maximum growth. I want you to have success with the trees and shrubs that you buy from us. And again, like I said 500 times in the past, the biggest mistake you can make on bare roots especially is to overwater. I mean, you don't need it with this kind of rain and this kind of wet. You're not going to need to water them at all. And if you plant a bare root tree, say in February, don't even think about watering it till about April or May at the earliest, and then only once or twice per month for the first summer. Just keep it damp, not saturated. The too much water rots the roots, and if you have rotted roots, it can't bring the nutrition from the soil and pass it up into the tree so the tree actually grows. And you know, it's like no roots means no nutrients, so you can't do anything. And the first thing that you notice with an over watered shrub or a tree, you're diligently watering it, say once a week or twice a week or whatever, and the leaves, it's leafed out, and then the leaves start to turn brown on the edges, and then the leaves start to curl up. That's the first sign of overwatering. And you can save the tree even when that happens. Just stop the watering. Don't water it. Don't fertilize it. Don't do anything to it. Leave it alone.
Well, on that note, should we take a break?
We'll take a break. I've got a lot more to say, though.
Wow. I'm glad to hear it.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back with more Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show here on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Alrighty, we're at 4:23 on the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. Let us continue now with Mike's thoughts on bare root trees.
Bare root trees, okay. And if you have a question, 673-4464 will get you right through. And just another thought on bare root trees. There was a client I had that he wanted an orchard, and I couldn't get to his project till about the first part of June. And, of course, it's like, you know, barely summer. It's not roasty-toasty, but it's, you know, in an 80-degree range. And I, as I said in the last segment, I had all these bare root trees that year, just kind of lined them out in sawdust and was keeping them alive. And he wanted this orchard, and there was 48 trees that he wanted. And I thought, well, I could go buy potted ones and at twice the price and haul them down and all that kind of stuff. But I thought, well, let me try these bare roots. And so I picked out his 48 trees. I laid them down bare root in the truck, and I had a hose going on them so they didn't dry out. And they were leafed out. And so we dumped a couple of scoops of wet sawdust or bark on top of them, and then I wet that down really well. Drove them out to the job, and we had already pre-dug the holes, and I just drove up through the orchard area, and we'd pull out, you know, whatever tree was next and plant it and went on. And we planted all 48 trees, and not one of them died. All of them made it. All of them did well. And he did not have irrigation out there in his orchard area, but so it was a hand watering type thing. And every one of them survived. So I know how tough, you know, people think, oh, gosh, that tree's not going to make it. This is this, and it needs this. No, they're a whole lot tougher than what you think. And as what my old silviculture professor in college used to say, plants grow not because of us, but they grow in spite of us. And, you know, that is really true. they don't miss a beat. They know how to do it. So. But since we have a few months until spring, now also is a good time to plan your landscape. Let's say you've just bought a brand new home, and your yard is kind of bare. It's flattened out, and maybe has some topsoil that the contractor put in there. And you're trying to figure out, what do I do? Do I do a lawn, or do I do some roses or shrubs, or do I put a shade tree in? You know, what's the deal? Well, if you've never if you've never done that before, it can be difficult and mind-boggling, and you need to get some expert advice, or again, get a landscaping book from one of the box stores. They have a big selection of those, and shows some basic steps in what you can do. The big mistake that I find of folks that are just doing this, brand new homeowners that have never done it before, is actually twofold. They go to a nursery of some sort, and they'll select all these plants with a vision in their head of what their front yard looks like or backyard looks like. And they'll buy too many plants, and they'll take them home and put them out, and they'll put them too close together. Or they will put them too close to a fence or too close to the foundation of the house, because these plants are, say, 1 gallon size, which are a small plant, and they look small. And if you don't, let's say you have 40 feet of length to landscape, and you think, well, maybe 10 or 12 of these little plants will do really well in there. Well, it depends on the shrub, depends on the plant. You know, what's the ultimate growth? And that's where good questions always come in. What's the ultimate growth? How big is this puppy going to be in 5 years or 10 years? And like I say, the rookies that are, they mean well, and they want it to look good right off the bat. But they'll find that if you plant them too close together, you're going to have a real mess in maybe 2 or 3 years as they grow together and grow up against the house and entangle each other. And they just don't have the air circulation or sun circulation that they need to bring out their best qualities. So consequently, If you get let's say azaleas, let's say it's the north side of a house, and you've got some 1 gallon size azaleas, and they're, you know, fairly small, and you say, well, they would look good, and you plant, and you put them out, and you just line the pots out, and just stand back and take a look, and oh, they're about, say, 3 feet apart. Well, that's much too close, because in a blink of an eye, like within 3 years, they'll be overwhelming one another. They will be touching and starting to push the other guy, their neighbor, out of the bed. So if you have a 1 gallon size plant, you go 5 or 6 feet on spacing between the plants, and probably at least 3 feet away from the foundation. And that makes for a bigger planting bed. And in time, as those plants grow, if you think, well, it's too sparse, well, you can always add some little things in between to kind of fill up the space. But what you don't want to do is try to slam it all together so it looks good right off the bat, whereas in 3 years you might be pulling half of it back out. So it's a waste of time, a waste of money. So just... again, if you need advice, call somebody who is experienced. Call us at Wintergreen. Or if you buy stuff at Wintergreen, I make sure you know that. Or any of my staff will make sure that you plant them correctly. You don't plant them too close to one another, or you don't plant them too close to a fence or a foundation. We want that plant to be special all the time. We want it to look good all the time. And it's just a few simple things that you have to do. But if you're not experienced in that, you don't know. And it's not that you're wrong and bad, is you just don't know what the capability of that plant is. And like a small plant can grow quite large in a very short period of time, especially if it's, an abelia or a photinia, which can get 6 or 8 feet in a very short time. And if you've got them 3 feet apart, you've got a mess on your hands. So space them out, give them room, they'll grow. So like for roses, for instance, you get these roses and you go, gee whiz, they're so beautiful, and you start to lay them out. You don't want to plant a rose any closer than 5 feet. I would plant them 6 or 7 feet apart, because roses do get big. And if you get them too close and then you try to prune them, you get in this mess with all these thorns stuck in your hands, because one branch is overlapping another branch, et cetera, and it just gets in the way. Give them some space. They need some room to grow, and you can prune them and keep them in shape, and they're fine. You can always, like I say, add something later on, a small ground cover or some petunias or geraniums in between for added color. But spacing ensures good air and sun circulation for great growth for a healthy plant. I don't know what I can compare this to other than you know, it only works with plants, I guess. And there are some ground covers again that will do a good job, too good of a job unless they are regularly pruned back. And there's two of them that come to mind. If you've got a steep bank and nothing else will grow on it, well, I've got a couple that will work for you. But there are some tricks to the trade with them as well. One of those ground covers is ivy. Everybody thinks, well, ivy is an indestructible plant. It is. Once you plant one, it's there and it grows no matter what you do to it. And the other one is St. John's wort, which is another ground cover type. That flowers in the summer. But both of these plants are great for slopes that are steep with poor soil. Neither needs any care once they are established. And I mean, that's you work with them the first year to establish them. And after that, hey, they're on their own. They will do their thing. You don't have to mess with them. And the thing about them, if you've got rotten soil and it's hard for you to dig in and it's ugly and rocky and muddy, you put a handful or a couple of handfuls of good potting soil in the hole. That's all it needs, because once it starts, it goes. I've seen both of these plants just grow in almost rock and with absolutely no care. And ivy, of course, has been around since the creation of the earth. And ivy grows in the sun, it grows in the shade, it can climb trees, it can climb fences, or it can climb up the side of your house and get in your rain gutters or under your shakes or shingles. And like I say, a little water the first summer, and it's good to go. There's no worrying about it. The problem is maintenance of these things. If you don't maintain its growth, it'll take over. No matter where it is, it'll take over and continue to grow. Then after a few years, you rather than pull out your hair, you want to get rid of this stuff, and it doesn't want to die. It refuses to die. It's a high labor, long term process to kill it, and so that's another reason for not overwhelming your planting area with too many plants. So one way to kill ivy is to cover it with a tarp or some heavy-duty clear plastic for maybe a year and let the sun bake it to death and don't let any rain get on it, no air get on it, and it'll turn up its toes and die. You can get a machine in there, like a backhoe, and remove as much as possible with a backhoe. But the problem with that is that... and the third process, though, is with a weed whacker or weed eater. Get in there and whack them way down to the ground and all that, and then spray it with crossbow or even bleach until nothing grows back. And that may take more than 1 year to accomplish because it's a very tough plant to kill. It just doesn't say, I give up and go away. It's like blackberries, it's like poison oak. There's a few of those plants out there that, hey, they ain't going to give it up, baby, no matter what you do to them. They're there. Okay, we'll take a break. I got more.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Yeah, I think it's hotter than 54 in this studio. I mean, it seems hotter anyway. Yeah, it does. Anyway, I've been talking about the pluses and the minuses of ivy. It's a great ground cover. I mean, it does its job, but if you want to change and do something else, that's where the real labor and intensity and all that comes in. Because earlier I said, you could weed whack it and spray it, or you can pull it. The problem is, if you leave one little root of ivy in the ground, you don't get it, or it didn't get sprayed, or something like that. That thing just regenerates itself gangbusters and comes back like there's no tomorrow. And before you know it, you got another ivy garden growing. So it's good to, you can weed whack it, but if you see, and then see the new growth and then spray it. And you may have to spray it two or three or four times before you kill all of it, before it's ready to plant with anything new. And like I say, it may take a year to accomplish that, to make sure that it's all gone. Because if you think it's all gone, and then you put a new plantation of rhododendrons or azaleas or dogwoods or whatever back into that same area, and you notice a year later that there's ivy crawling up the azalea stems or the rhodi stems, you know you didn't get it all. And then it's a horrendous job to try to get rid of it. It's even worse than the first time around. So be wise. before you plant ivy. Picture what it's going to look like in, say, 5 to 10 years, and plant it sparingly, because you don't need to have it at 10 inches apart on your slope. I mean, if you put them 4 feet apart, 3 feet apart, each small plant, they're going to grow together and in no time at all. And again, it's something that you have to do a little bit of research on, and see, you know, how does it grow, how does it spread, and make sure that you pay attention, because that's real stuff there. It's not fake news at all. Okay, and the other plant that's tougher than nails is called St. John's wort. It's also a ground cover, and this is a plant that when you plant it, it roots in and starts spreading. It's also very hard to get rid of, in case you change your mind 5 years down the road and say, "Hey, I don't like this anymore," because it's and it grows. St. John's wort grows fast, and it has a bright yellow flower in the spring and summer. It's very attractive in that respect, and it does cover a lot of ground, you know, very quickly. And it's a bit more attractive than ivy in that respect. But to eliminate St. John's wort down the road, the same process is used with the ivy. You know, just digging out these plants just doesn't work, because they will regenerate very quickly from just one spare little skinny root that you didn't see, that was underground, that you missed, and bingo, they're back at it again. So make sure your area is maybe secluded by sidewalks or driveways or something like that, and it's not going to intrude on the neighbors, and you'll be able to take care of it. And once it's in, if you maintain it and regularly kind of prune it back and keep it in shape, it'll last forever. It's very, very good. Now, the largest patch of St. John's wort I've ever seen is out on Whistler's Bend Road, at a home on Whistler's Bend. And if you've ever been out Whistler's Bend and you're going towards Whistler's Bend Park, there are houses along the North Umpqua, and they've been there for years and years and years. And one time a gentleman, not too long ago, probably within the last couple of years, called me up for a small project in his yard. So I go out there, and he's got, you know, a lot of oaks and some spruces and some pines, and he just wanted to fix up one small area. And he says, "Hey," and we walk kind of around the side to the backyard, and the house is on the level, and then the river is about 200 feet below. It's a real steep slope, and it's about 200 feet below us. And he had probably an acre and a half, pretty long, pretty wide, and he had planted St. John's wort on that slope. This entire slope was filled with St. John's wort. I'd never seen that much. I never had seen that much St. John's wort growing in one spot ever in all my professional life, except if they were in pots or something like that. So we went to the edge where it dropped off, and I looked down there, and I thought, geez Louise, and the stuff went all the way from his backyard, all the way down the slope, down to the river. Now, this slope was fairly steep, and of course, it wasn't topsoil. It was just regular old soil, Douglas County soil out there, and this stuff was so healthy, it was amazing. It was like, you know, like I say, 200 feet down, and at least that wide, so I'd say it was an acre or close to it. And the it was totally covered, but it was thick, it was lush, and he had a trail down to the river where he kept his boat or had access to go fishing or whatever. And he had a really cool trail all the way down through there, and it kind of did a switchback thing because the thing was pretty steep. You just couldn't walk straight down it, and it was great. There was no erosion on his bank at all. I mean, it just grabs the soil and it stays there. And again, and he had oak trees. There were some oak trees and I think maybe a few madrone and a fir or two interspersed that were naturals, natives. But St. John's Wort doesn't mind a little bit of shade. It can grow in full shade, it can grow in full sun or partial shade, whatever. But it's a very tough, tough thing, something you don't have to worry about. You don't have to water. You don't have to fertilize. You might have to take a weed eater or two once every 5 years just to kind of keep it in place. But both of those plants, the ivy and the St. John's Wort, are very tough and vigorous growers. And if planted like in a normal size yard, make sure you have a good maintenance plan to keep it where it belongs. A good maintenance plan would be, like I said earlier, a sidewalk. So it, I haven't seen it grow up through a sidewalk yet, but who knows. Some kind of a barrier that it can't get by, because you don't want it sneaking into the neighbor's yard if you live in a neighborhood. Pretty soon your neighbor would be over bounding on the door saying, hey, your stinking plants are coming in my yard and I can't get rid of them. So that was good. Now, about 40 years ago, I planted one St. John's Wort plant at the end of my field. The end of my field is probably 500 feet from my house. Now, this was a small 4-inch pot, so it's a very small plant. It was in the shade and down next to my creek. And I just dug a hole in the natural soil and put it in, never watered it, never fertilized it. It did very, very well and spread quickly. And over the years, it's still growing today, but I kind of run my tractor and my scraper box through it once in a while just to keep it tame, so it's not running up the road or something like that. And it doesn't even seem to be bothered by that. They just where I ran the scraper box and just kind of messed it up and dug it up a little bit. Yeah, and within months, there are new plants coming up in that same area. And so this thing is still growing well. But I do keep it in mind that I have to make sure that it's not going to spread into the vast area of the field, too. And it blooms in the summer, and it's just gorgeous. Bright, big yellow flowers, you know, hot yellow flowers. And it sends up new shoots every year, and it from one plant I must have 1,500 plants growing out there from one. So think about that when you're planting St. John's Wort, and the reason I planted it, and I do this a lot on my own property, was to test the hardiness. Well, the book says this, and the literature says this, and this is what it'll do. So I put them to the extreme test, and if they pass the extreme test, I know that it's going to work for somebody that lives in a subdivision, somebody that has a yard that's taken care of. And I've not done that with ivy simply because I know the ivy will work. But I wanted to do it with the St. John's Wort because it is, like I say, a little bit showier. And if it's kept in bounds, it looks good. Nothing else will grow in it because it'll choke out anything else that tries to grow in there. So it's a good compact plant in that there's no room for anything else to grow. And if anything else got started in there, it would soon die because it couldn't get any water or nutrition. So that's how that goes. But I could probably kill the stuff with multiple sprayings, but I don't, because once in a while I go down and I'll dig a few up and I'll pot them up and use them in somebody else's yard who requests it. And but if I wanted to kill it, it'd have to be multiple sprayings and with bleach or crossbow or something. Bleach works pretty good. It's a lot cheaper than crossbow or Roundup or anything like that. And you use it almost full strength, and you just spray it on a hot summer day, no matter if it's weeds or ivy or St. John's Wort. And pretty soon that will do it in right away. It does, and I've heard that vinegar does a number on this stuff too, but I haven't tried the vinegar, and it's too expensive in comparison to bleach. Bleach is good. You buy a gallon for how much? I don't know, $4 or $5, maybe more. I'm not sure. Yeah, yeah, that's another. Exactly.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty, here we are already in the last segment with Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show on this Wednesday.
Yeah, we are on the last shot here, and I want to tell you a few of my favorites. I mean, the St. John's wort and the ivy, they're good where they're used in a proper way. Now, my favorite ones that are ground covers that are easier, prettier, and easier to control, at least, and they're very, very tough, are Cotone Aster, Kinnikinick, and then there's some junipers. They do the job, and like I say, they're a lot easier to control, and they are more attractive in the landscape. They're easy to prune and keep in shape and more colorful in the spring. The Cotone Aster has white flowers, and then the white flowers turn into red-orange berries through fall, through summer and fall and winter. The birds like to eat them, and they do really, really good. And they grow fairly quickly, and again, you can plant them on a very steep slope, and they'll start to spread and do the job for you. And if they come back toward the... say the lawn is at the edge of the slope, all you got to do is cut them back once a year or maybe once every other year. Just cut them back, and it forces the growth in the opposite direction. So it's a no-brainer in that respect. And then I like the gold-colored junipers that are bright gold, yellow new growth when they're pushing that new growth in the spring. And the old growth on those junipers is kind of a light green. It's a very attractive, easy to care for plant. Again, does well on very nice steep slopes where it would be a pain in the neck to go down there and mess with it, you know, once a week or anything like that. And as these grow, less and less weeds appear because they can't get up through the juniper because it's kind of taken over. And but the the Kinnikinick is also it's a wild plant that grows up in, you know, Diamond Lake and Tokidi and up the North Umpqua, and that's how tough it is. It grows out of rocks practically, and it's a low ground cover, you know, maybe three inches tall, something like that. It depends. And also has a small flower with a red berry, and the birds eat them, of course. And I've seen them. I hiked a portion of the Pacific Crest Trail one day east north of Mount Thielson, just to, you know, get a feel for it. And I was walking out there, and I'm looking at this ground cover, and I think, what the heck is that? So I stopped, and I took a very, you know, very close look, and I'm at, like, you know, 6,000-foot elevation, something like that. And it was Cotone Aster. It was Kinnikinick. I'm not Cotone Aster. It was Kinnikinick growing up there amongst the rocks, and there's not much soil up there at that elevation. It's pretty, you know, there's a little bit of soil and mostly rocks. So whatever watering they get is when it snows 5 or 6 or 10 feet and sits there for 4 months. That's their water source. And of course, they don't get, nobody goes up and fertilizes them, but they're very attractive. And again, this is one of those plants you can stick on a slope, maybe take care of it the first year, and after that, they are good to go. They don't They don't need you. they don't want you. So think about the and the cotoneasters, there's probably two or three of the very low-growing type, and then there's some that are kind of medium size, and then there's some that get, you know, fairly tall, say 3 or 4 feet, but they can also grow in the, under those same kinds of conditions. But the thing that I want to impress is that there are many good ground covers to choose from. But again, you have to look around, look at your neighbors. What do they got? Do they got some ground covers? What are they? What kind? Go talk to your neighbor. Where'd you get that? How do you take care of it? Do you feed it? Do you water it? You know, those kinds of things, and gain that information. Most of the ground covers out there, for some reason, they're very tough. They're very tough. But, you know, just see what's growing around town. Look at some of the parks. The parks can, you know, there's a lot of grass in the parks, but there are planting beds as well. They'll also have a lot of ground covers in those planting beds. I know they do at Stewart Park, around the playground area, the restroom area, down by the band shell, that kind of thing. And they look good. And they're, again, easy care. Just remember, if you plant the wrong type of ground cover, it's going to keep you busy and maybe a bit frustrated in the long run. So it's a lot easier to plant something that you can control, something that's going to look good, something that's very hardy. Beware of the ivy, beware of St. John's wort. And I brought those two out because, excuse me, those are like the most ambitious, if you will. you don't want to put them amongst your roadies or amongst your azaleas or near your vegetable garden or something like that, because before you knew it, they would be taking the whole place over, and you'd
there
have a mess.
We go. That's all she wrote for the day.
Okay, thank you for listening.
Where are you located in Winston, Mike?
Oh, in Winston, we're south of Winston on Highway 99, about a quarter of a mile on the left. All of our roofs are green. You can't miss it.
There you go. All right. Thanks, Mike. We'll see you next week.
Okay, thank you.
You betcha.